Welcome to the Cult Film Showdown's special series on The Hitchhiker. This is the final episode, and I am James Cotta, here for one last time with The Hitchhiker, and I am joined by Nick Boxer.
Just keep working at it. It'll work. I'm not impotent.
Now you got me thinking of Animal House. Is it supposed to be this soft? And also here is Jack Hall.
Hey, that's not my thumb I'm sticking out to try and hitch a ride with. About the same size, though.
Is that
you don't know where to go with that, do you?
Is that a thumb in your pocket, or are you just ambivalent to see me? The Hitchhiker. So The Hitchhiker was a 1980s TV anthology that ran on HBO, the granddaddy of the made for adults anthology series, which half of television is now. And well, the other half being, of course, Star Wars. The last scene, or just last scene, is the episode we're looking at. And we haven't done this in a bit. There is a master of film that worked on this episode of The Hitchhiker. So, Jack, tell us about the master.
Yeah, this is, I think that we had to do this one. I don't think it was even an option. It's like, okay, this is the biggest name to have worked, certainly behind this camera, if not in front of it. In the entire series of The Hitchhiker. And that's Paul Verhoeven, who, of course, directed RoboCop, Total Recall, Basic Instinct, Showgirls. Famous Star Trooper or Starship Troopers, very famous Dutch director. And this would have been right after he did Flesh and Blood. I think this is the next director credit he had, right before RoboCop. So, RoboCop was 87, I believe, and this is 86, I think. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think he said that this was pretty much what got him the starting to work in American film.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of like his debut in North America, and it is a very Verhoeven episode. Mm-hmm. I mean, you think about all the things, kind of the things that when you say Basic Instinct, Starship Troopers, RoboCop, and Showgirls, when you see those things, those elements that you think of that are Verhoeven elements very much are present in this. I do want to give a quick shout out, by the way, if you haven't watched on Tubi, RoboDoc, the four-part, I think a total of 5 hours making on the 100-minute movie RoboCop. It seems like overkill at 5 hours for a 100-minute movie. But man, is it fantastic. It's on Tubi and highly recommend it.
Nice. Nick, tell us what happens in this little film.
Once again, we have a straightforward one, although this one is much more effective.
It's not straightforward. Are you kidding me?
it's more about the jump scares for me. It's about filmmaking, and we have a first-time director under a financial gun trying to get a good performance out of his actress, who he's also sleeping with. It's a horror film, and all of a sudden, we discover that she's being stalked. Mysterious phone calls. She's being followed at night. There's this weird thing with a mask that keeps popping up and showing up in different places. And she's getting scared.
I think you're
missing
a couple key elements already here, Nick. I think the fact that the she's in a horror movie. The guy with the mask in the horror movie is chasing her character in the horror movie. It's the same guy in a mask that's chasing her in real life. I think that's a key element that needs to be put in there.
I didn't think it mattered in the least, but okay. And I mean, it's a little bit of mystery. She's getting scareder and scareder. And of course, her director is there for her. Only a little bit of a twist. It turns out he's the one stalking her because she's a crappy actress and he needs a good performance. And when she's scared in real life, she's scared on screen. It continues like this for a while. Only it turns out she figures out the scam and turns the tables on him. And all of a sudden, he's getting the calls. And he follows her to a nightclub to protect her or something like that. I don't really know what's going on there. And she pulls a little joke on him and pulls out a knife and kills her, only it's not. She's just letting him know that she knew it was him all along. This one was, for me, about the directorial touches. The stuff with the mask was fantastic.
I think it's worth noting also, I don't think they were sleeping together. I think that they could have. I think it was that he was attracted to her and she was, you know, and that they could. But I don't think they actually had consummated the relationship yet. At least that's what I got out of it.
Yeah, I didn't get the feeling
they were sleeping together.
Yeah, I mean, open to interpretation, but yeah, my feeling is that, like, I didn't get the sense that he had her in the film because, like, we've got to keep her in the film because I'm sleeping with her. That's a tension actually that I might have missed it, that you mentioned, if you mentioned it, that this film is almost done. They haven't shot the final scene, which means they don't have a film. And the producers run out of money and she's not great. So that's like that financial part, and the producer, who's a friend of the director, like their back and forth is like just adding to the tension of the story, of the stakes of this. And ultimately, that's why I think there's, it does have a lot, like it has a couple of those, like, are we watching a movie? Are we watching a dream? Is this part really happening? Did any of these parts really happen?
Well, logically, none of them could have happened, because if you look at the sequence of events, you're like, this is not possible. Like, that's what they want you to think. I think that she's thinking it's all going on in her mind and it's not really happening. And then it turns out it is really happening. But if you analyze it, it's not possible that it could have really happened. Like, it's, did I mention it's very Verhoeven?
There's the bit where he goes to the club. So she has the script and she says, I want to do this in real life. But she doesn't tell him where to go. And then he just goes to this club where it's either it's the 80s or it's Halloween. It might be both. Lots of people in costume. And
there's like 200 people in costume, all of who know that she is playing this film.
Everyone's in on it. Yeah,
she organized this quick. Very quick.
That's right. This is sometimes
she apparently figured out to the point that she gets all this. You know, I mean, this is 1986 or something like that. And it's not like she could just do a group chat on Messenger.
Mm-hmm.
But she,
yeah, no Facebook event for this.
Yeah. No,
this is Rolodex totally time.
It's totally logical, but it's more about the style than the substance in this case. I mean, that is what we're dealing with, more about the style than the substance for once. And you know, I mean, I do like that they got this terrible actress, and that this movie is like a horror movie, slasher movie, is like 100 minutes long, and it's, you know, she's being terrible the entire thing. But if she can just nail the last scene, provided the people haven't walked out of the movie, for her being so terribly for it, she can just nail that last scene, it'll fix everything.
The story really didn't matter on this one, though, did it? I mean,
no, it did.
It's more about her dancing in that mask on the back of her head and stylish shots of where you kind of see the masked figure in the window across the street. It was all about director flourishes. It's not about the story. The story didn't make it. I mean, they tried to explain how he did the phone calls. Oh, my computer was on a timer and he called the restaurant. How could they time that conversation when you have a waiter bringing the phone to the table?
I love that part. Like, did the computer ask like for her for like to take the phone to her? Like, how did that part work?
Oh yeah, there's a lot that is very, like you say, I mean, but it doesn't matter. It's about the fun, and Peter Coyote is the lead character, the director, and he's fantastic too. As far as like the woman, the female lead, what gets me is I think their strategy was, we need to find somebody who can act like they can't act. And so the very first scene when she's acting in the movie that they're shooting, I'm thinking to myself, okay, she's doing a great job of acting like she can't act. Then it turns out that was probably because I don't think in real life she can act. Like, I think they just went, you know, it's just easier to get somebody who can't act to play a person who can't act. So she, for half the film, they're filming the film and she can't act, it works. And for the other half, you're like, oh man, she ever a bad actress, but she is hot.
She is. She's got that big 80s hair. Oh, yeah. That a little bit of Linnea Quigley looking in how they did her hair.
Oh, yeah.
Lagina Lookabill.
She mainly was on shows like Remington Steel and Falcon Crest and things like that. Yeah.
Yeah, never got the big break. It's like one episode, two episodes, one episode. And then even the film she did, she was, you know, like 10th on the call sheet kind of thing. And her last
she could stare out of space mythically or magically.
Well, did I mention she's a terrible actress?
Hung on her face. We seem to be criticizing this thing. I mean, I think this was my favorite episode of anything we've seen in this Hitchhiker series.
No, I'm not criticizing it. I mean, I'm being honest about it, but I'm saying all of these things, like the fact that she's in real life a terrible actress, playing a terrible actress, works. It's like this is probably the most cult film showdown episode of The Hitchhiker that we've seen, in that it's got that so bad it's good quality. You know, like, it is just, it's ridiculous. It makes no sense. I mean, the idea, was it Peter Coyote actually in makeup who was playing that old man? But
I don't think so, actually.
I don't think so either. Sense. But it doesn't mean it's not fun. It's fun as hell.
I actually didn't think it was him playing. I thought you meant that, like, canonically in the episode, it was supposed to be him.
Yeah, in real life, was it him under a mask, or was that a real actor? I think it was a real actor.
It was a real actor, yeah. Yeah, there's the bit where she sees the guy in the apartment. She goes over, brings the police with her, and there's this old guy that lives alone in the apartment. And then later she finds the mask of this old guy, which is just,
the old guy says hilarious. Something to her while holding her hand. And then the director, Peter Coyote, says the exact same thing to her while holding her hand in the exact same way. And that's when she figures out, hey, but you don't explain how she goes from being in the apartment with the guy scared, or this happens a few times where she's like in real life scared. And then suddenly she's on the set and the whole thing had been filmed and her performance is great. Like, again, no logic, no sense. It's a fantasy world episode more than probably any other. And again, somehow it works.
It is a lot of fun, and I agree. Just because we're having some fun with it, it is very enjoyable. It is one of the better episodes of the series that, from everything we saw. And you know, it also feels more
like cool. if we were doing this in the Octagon and we were doing schlock appeal, it would have high schlock appeal, which is one of the key categories, one of the key five categories on which we judge the films.
It's true.
Looking for the ultimate B movie.
I love it. Any last things we want to say on last scene?
I kind of want to watch women dance with a mask on the back of their heads. I really, I want more of that.
That was surprisingly sexy.
I like the outfit she put on when she put the mask on, which it was like this black leather, like dress thing that makes none of it made sense. Did I mention that? It's so much fun.
I tried to imagine that Verhoeven's English wasn't great at the time, and like that's just the best that the crew could do on figuring out what he wanted for design.
I can tell you from watching the RoboDoc documentary, the most common line that he would say during RoboCop was, "More blood, you're fucking up my movie." So I imagine it was something similar on the set of this.
She's got no fit when you can't see her clavicles. This is no good at all. Try again. Well, this was The Hitchhiker, and I'm really glad we did this series. It was a lot of fun. I was not familiar with it at all, and I hadn't seen any of these episodes. So that's what I've been enjoying about some of these, about the series that we've been looking at, is just having the chance to explore things that I haven't seen. And I don't know what the word for it is, but it's nostalgia for something that you didn't experience. It's nostalgia for the 80s. But not for this particular thing, just for a time where things felt like this.
Yes. Would you guys go back and watch more episodes? This is the series, probably the first thing where I'm like, I would go back and watch more episodes despite it not being for the show anymore.
Yeah, I think I'd look at episodes. I think I for actors and directors, because I think that like that's also a lot of the enjoyment of this has been seeing people very early career for some of the folks that we've seen. Like the couple of episodes ago when we saw Kirstie Alley in one of her first roles, one of her first lead roles. So that stuff's a lot. And then this Verhoeven being his first American work, it's just kind of it's a bit like Baby Pictures. Like I get a kick out of that kind of lost chapter in someone, and for someone whose career I know pretty well.
Like I say, I mean, for me, I would go back and watch.
It's an interesting time capsule that if I hear somebody talk about something that happened in one, I wouldn't object to watching again.
All right, yeah, I'll go back and listen to the teaser we did. To hear what our B list was, what the also rans were. All right. Yeah,
no, well, I mean it is one where I also wouldn't do everything, but I also would pick out certain directors and stars. Kirstie Alley, this was the one we did, was her second episode of it in 1995. She did her first episode. I'd go back and watch that, for instance.
All right. Well, this was The Hitchhiker from the Cult Film Showdown, a special series. And you can find the Cult Film Showdown on Instagram, and you can support us on Patreon, both at the Cult Film Showdown. And you can find us on YouTube, like, subscribe, and comment. Subscribe on your favorite podcast app. And we are sponsored by WeTalkPodcast.com, the home of the Octagon, our search for the ultimate B-movie. And We Talk Podcasts has a Facebook, and they have a Twitter, and they have the wonderful website, WeTalkPodcast.com.
And the Octagon.
And the Octagon's there.
If you want to know more about the Octagon, listen to the next episode. We'll probably reference it.
We'll be back pretty soon. Won't be a big break. We will be looking at a couple of this is like the film festival when they say that the movie is screened out of competition. That's what we'll be doing. It's a few movies that we're just bringing to each other. A couple of fun flicks, and then we'll
not right for the Octagon, but not right for the Octagon, but would be really fun to talk about.
Well, for myself, Jim, Jack, and Nick, thanks for hitching a ride. I saw that in a show recently. It was like they're like having a fight on a boat. It's just like a small, like a rowboat. And the guy says, like, is this just your personal Octagon?